I'd like us to, first of all, turn to the, well, turn to the book of Jonah. Tonight's message is about not so much, when I call it the divine pursuit, it's not so much about our pursuit of God, although we're going to be talking about that, but God's pursuit of us, the divine pursuit of his people. And it's interesting how Jesus said that the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost. So he's come to pursue sinners to see that they should be saved. But not only does he pursue sinners, but he also pursues labourers as well. And so we see that throughout the scripture, and you'll see that we see that in the book of Jonah. So that's where I told you to go, wasn't it? Jonah. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah. Jonah. I see an affinity between the book of Jonah and the call of Peter, as recorded in John chapter 20. God was very determined to use this man, Jonah. And God was very determined to use Peter as well. And as you look at Jonah, you see that God had a controversy with this man. God really wanted to use this man. He wanted to bless this man, and he wanted to use this man to be a blessing to other people. But Jonah was trying to run away, but God was trying to catch him. God doesn't need to try, he just does. And you see this pursuit of God after various people throughout the Bible. First of all, you see it in the life of Adam. Adam and Eve, they sin, and then, of course, the voice of God comes seeking them in the garden. Where art thou, Adam? And so this is the first instance we see of God seeking after people. In fact, through the book of Genesis, you see God seeking people. And so Genesis kind of sets the tone that God is a seeker of people. He seeks people to be reconciled to himself. Genesis shows how mankind has departed from God, but it also shows how God takes the first step to seek out people. So he seeks out Adam, he seeks out Cain, and then he seeks out Abram as well. He seeks out the world by seeking Abram and seeks out how he may restore the world to himself, or people, the people who will come to him. We also see in the book of Hosea, we see Hosea, we're going to get to the book of Jonah soon, we're just talking about some other people here. Hosea was commanded by God to marry a woman who was either known to be or known that she would be an unfaithful woman to him. And her name was Gomer. And of course she was unfaithful to him, and then God commanded him and said, go and buy her back to yourself. So he went and he found her in the slave market after she'd been unfaithful to him and sought her own paramours. And he bought her back to himself. And God was saying, this is a picture of me seeking after Israel. And so that's what God does. He pursues after those ones that he has foreknown. And he even pursues after those that will not be saved. He pursues after them too. But we see the beautiful thing is that those who that he has an eternal plan for, he seeks after them. And he asks us to seek after him. And of course, with Israel, we see again and again throughout the Old Testament, God seeking after wayward Israel. They're not showing any inclination towards him. Throughout the book of Judges, you see the cycle going down and down again and again. And then throughout the kings and apostasy of Israel, you see them turning away again and again to their idols and then staying turned away, and then God still sending prophets. And throughout the book of Jeremiah, we see seven instances of the phrase rising up early. Seven instances of that phrase throughout the book of Jeremiah, rising up early. Why? God said, I have been rising up early and sending prophets to you, rising up early and trying to instruct you. And Ezekiel 34, we see that God calls himself the shepherd. I will both search and seek out my sheep. And so he's the one who goes onto the mountains and seeks after his people. So we're not to think of God as a distant God or a God that's disinterested in us by any means. God is the one who seeks after us, first and foremost. I mean, God created us. God's the one who seeks after us. Solomon in the Old Testament and even David prayed God to incline our hearts towards him. And so God does so much to turn people to himself, creates them, gives them a conscience, gives them the light of the light of conscience, shines into their hearts to a degree by his Holy Spirit, and always has done. And Jesus is the light that shines in the darkness. We're told that in the New Testament, shines in the darkness, okay, so that every man can see it. Jesus is that light. That's very interesting. And the darkness doesn't comprehend it by and large. If it does, it becomes light. And then we see Ezekiel, for instance. Ezekiel was also a person that God sought. He kind of grabbed him, as it were, conscripted him into his service. And a glorious prophecies came from the pen of Ezekiel. You see, we really don't know what's good for us. People don't know what's good for themselves. Just like sheep don't know what's good for themselves. They know they want to eat. They know they want to drink. They know they want to sleep. They know they don't want to be in danger. But they don't know the best way to go or best place to be. And so they need a shepherd. And so that's what the shepherd does. God reveals himself as a shepherd early on in the Bible, and then throughout the rest of the Bible reveals himself in the book of Genesis, actually, to be a shepherd with Jacob talking about him as the shepherd. And so we see Jesus says, I came to seek and to save that which was lost. We also see in Luke chapter 17, we see the seeking after the lost sheep. We see the seeking after the lost coin. And now I'd like to look at a few key instances of God, two particular key instances in the Bible of God seeking people. So, of course, in the book of Jonah, we see God not only seeking after Jonah. He says to Jonah, arise, chapter 1, verse 2, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness is come up before me. So what's God doing? He's seeking after the heathen in the Old Testament. But he's also seeking not just the heathen, but he's seeking his own labourer to go to them. And what is his labourer? What does his servant do? Verse 3, but Jonah rose up to flee unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Went down to Joppa, and he found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare thereof and went down into it to go with them unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. So we see this phrase repeated, this from the presence of the Lord. He wants to get away from God because he doesn't really know what's good for him. He can see some immediate danger, or so he thinks, going to the Ninevites. It's not a great people to be with. And he wants to run away from that. He wants to run away from God. But God doesn't just sit around and watch Jonah go and catch that ship and say, okay, well, he always was a bit of a stubborn man. I knew that streak was in him. We'll find someone else instead. No. God gets on that ship with Jonah and sticks with him there. God goes into the belly of that whale with Jonah, and he's with him there and working in his life. And so these other men here on the ship, as you read through the narrative, and most of you would know, hopefully, I think most of you in this room, I would see, would be familiar with the story of Jonah, catches this ship. God sends a storm. Everybody gets worried and draws lots, trying to find out whose fault it is. And of course, God reveals that it's Jonah's fault. And they say, "Well, what have you done? Where are you from? What's your name? What's your occupation?" And Jonah says, "Well, I'm running away from God." And of course, that must have sounded so silly to them. And so they said, "What do you want us to do to you?" And so he said, "Well, throw me overboard and then the sea will be calm for you." And so they threw him overboard. And of course, God had prepared a great big fish to swallow him. And the fish swallowed him and then vomited him up again after God had been doing some heart work in his heart while he was in the belly of the whale. And vomited him up again, probably on a shore that was close to Nineveh. God said again, "Go to Nineveh." So he did. He went to Nineveh, and they actually repented of their sin, because God had been preparing their hearts through various natural disasters and calamities. And then Jonah got angry about it. Got angry that they actually repented, because he didn't want them to repent. He wanted to see them perish. He thought they were just so wicked. He wanted them to perish. And so after doing the will of God, he was sorry that he'd done the will of God and sorry that God did anything good for those people. And as I've pointed out before when I've preached this book, this whole book finishes on a very uneasy note. It finishes on a point of tension where God's saying to Jonah, is it a good thing that you're angry? Yes, it's a great thing that I'm angry. And God says, "Well, you cared about this gourd. Why shouldn't I care about Nineveh? These people that, you know, don't even know their right hand from their left hand. Why shouldn't I spare these people?" And Jonah never answers the question. The book finishes with a question mark. But what we see is that God is busy pursuing Jonah. God's busy pursuing these people of Nineveh. He wants them to be saved. And it's just so easy for this world, and even for us at times, to think God is a disinterested God. God is a silent God. What's God up to? What's he doing in my life? But God is not like that. God is constantly seeking after us. Now, that can be a terrifying thing, or it can be a very comforting thing. We see in the case of Elijah as well. Elijah was fleeing from Jezebel because he had just slain the prophets of Baal, and so Jezebel was angry about that, and she was threatening to kill him, and so Elijah ran away, and then he thought he was the only one, and so then he ran all the way to Mount Horeb, and he didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights. He just ran all the way, a great big journey. And so he thought, I'm the only one. And he got into such a state that he thought it's better for God to take my life. He didn't want to take his own life, but he said, "It's better for God to take my life." So he said to God, "Just take my life, because I'm not better than my fathers." So God comes along to him and pursues him. It's as if Elijah also is trying to run away. And God comes along to pursue after him and says, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he says that a few times to him. "What are you doing here?" So that's how God is. We see it also in the life of Peter. If you have a look at Luke chapter 5. And we see Jesus' work in the life of Peter. First of all, the first instance, Jesus comes across these disciples, as recorded elsewhere, and he is walking along the seashore, and we can't assume that they haven't also been watching him teaching various multitudes around Capernaum, places like that, and watching him, and he says, "Follow me," and so they follow him. But there has to be this there has to be this this interaction. There has to be this personal interaction. And it happens between Peter and Jesus in chapter 5 here. And it came to pass that as the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret. That's one of the same as Galilee. It's also the same as Chinneroth. And saw two ships standing by the lake. But the fishermen were gone out of them and were washing their nets. And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed him that he would thrust out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the people out of the ship. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught, which means a great big catch of fish. And Simon answering said unto him, Master, we have toiled all the night and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word I will let down the net. And when they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net brake. And they beckoned unto their other partners, which were in the other ship, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both the ships, so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For he was astonished, and all that were with him at the draught, of the fishes which they had taken. And so was also James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were partners with Simon. And Jesus said unto Simon, Fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men. And when they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him. Okay, this wasn't the first time that he kind of gave them an invitation to follow him. He'd already actually invited them to follow him, but here he was showing them his power and demonstrating that he wanted them to be with him so that he could do some work through them. Now, Peter was impressed. He was convicted in his spirit about not believing what Jesus had said. And we see that in verse 8. He fell down at Jesus' knees saying, Depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord. Why? For he was astonished. And all that were with him at the draught of the fishes which they had taken. He was very, very humbled because he had said, you know, he had rationalised that this wasn't possible and he'd only begrudgingly cooperated with the venture. And then he realised how much more pure and holy and able and powerful Jesus was than himself. And he felt very humbled that Jesus should do this miracle for him. And what was his response? He asked the Lord to just go away from him. Now, you might think, why would you ask the Lord to go away from you? Wouldn't you want to be with Jesus in that kind of a situation? You know, where you've seen Jesus do a miracle, wouldn't you want to hang around him a bit more? But Peter was very much humbled. He very much felt unworthy that to be around this man. And often we feel just so unworthy to be around God and to serve him. But what does Jesus say? He doesn't say, yeah, sure, I'll go. I'll go. It's all right. I'll go. I know you don't feel comfortable around me. And after all, you really aren't suited for what I need you for. I need somebody else. No, he didn't say that to him. Because he all along had this plan for Peter. There was a time came when he said to his disciples, you haven't chosen me, I've chosen you. There's something I need to do. I think it's my phone. I'm just going to, I think I need to put it on flight mode. What about that? Sorry. So Jesus answers and says, don't be afraid, in essence. Fear not. Fear not. In other words, don't despair. Don't think that all is lost just because you are the way you are. Now, isn't that very interesting? Fear not. You wouldn't naturally think that Jesus would have to say, fear not in such a situation. We don't expect Simon is thinking Jesus would strike him down dead on the spot. No, that's not what Simon's worried about. Otherwise, Jesus wouldn't have given him a great big, you know, catch a fish. He was afraid that he just was not going to be of any use at all. He was afraid that there was really nowhere that he could fit in into God's plan. And Jesus is saying, no, don't be afraid. From this time forwards, you're going to catch men. And so no wonder it says that in verse 11, when they've gotten back to the land in their ships, they left everything and they followed him. Now, we see Peter is a very eager follower of Jesus throughout. He's very eager indeed. And of course, he often says the first thing that springs into his mind. And of course, he denies the Lord as well. So just like us, fallible, sinful, blundering. And if you turn to John chapter 20, you'll see things come to a culmination point, because Peter was encouraged in this beginning stage. He was encouraged that, yes, Jesus did indeed want him to be one of his followers. But it was not because of Peter. It was not because of who he was. It was because of who Jesus was that Peter was chosen to be. And that's why it's so wrong to say that, you know, Peter is this incredible rock that God's going to build his church, that Jesus was going to build his church on. That totally misses the point of what God's trying to teach through the life of Peter. Jesus says, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar Jonah," when Peter confesses that Jesus is the Son of the living God, the Christ. "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar Jonah, Simon, son of a silly dove." That's what Jonah literally means. Okay, and I think there's a bit of an affinity between Jonah and Peter, right? I mean, maybe Peter's literal father was Jonah. It might also be interesting that Peter might have thought that he was a bit like, later on, he was a bit like Jonah, because he was ready to, you know, ready to run the other direction. But anyway, Jonah was a bit like a flighty dove, a fearful dove. And we're looking in John chapter 20 here. And, sorry, gave you the wrong chapter number. It's not chapter 20, it's chapter 21. And so Jesus, of course, appears to them at the Sea of Galilee. And, of course, Peter had said to the other disciples, "I'm going fishing." Now, they did know that Jesus wanted to meet them. But it's very interesting that Peter said, "I'm going fishing." And they said, "We're going to go with you." And they went out and they caught nothing. Just a very terse kind of statement there. Summary of absolute futility. Verse 3. And it would seem that Peter was once again despairing. Back in the beginning, he had thought, well, how could I be of any use to God? But now he'd actually denied the Lord three times. Surely, after everything that I've seen, that I've been through with this man, now I've denied him three times. Surely there's nothing better for me to do than to go back to my fishing. That's what I'm good at. I can do that well. I can catch fish, I can scale them, gut them and sell them. At least I can say that I'm good at that. But I'm not good at being a follower of Jesus. I'm not worthy to be a follower of Jesus. Well, Jesus had other ideas, did he not? And so Jesus came. Now, they were out there fishing on their boat. What did Jesus do? He came. He came to them. What does he do then? He calls out to them. Verse 4, "And when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. And Jesus saith unto them, Children, have ye any meat? They answered him, No. And he said unto them, Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. Therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. And by the way, you know who that disciple is that Jesus loved, don't you? It's the one who wrote this particular gospel, John. That's how he always identifies himself, never by name in this book. "That disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girt his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes." So it would appear that Peter had to jump into the sea in order to grab the net, in order to be able to pull it effectively to the land. But he didn't want to turn up without a coat on land, because they had some respect, sense of respect for the Lord. "And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes. Verse 9, as soon as they then were come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid thereon, and bread. Jesus saith unto them, Bring of the fish which ye have now caught. Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land, full of great fishes, 153. And for all there were so many, yet was not the net broken. Jesus saith unto them, Come and dine. And none of the disciples durst ask him, Who art thou? Knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then cometh and taketh bread and giveth them, and fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus showed himself to his disciples after that he was risen from the dead." So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these?" Remember, he's reminding him, son of Jonas. Jonas, of course, means dove. And doves are very timid animals. And Simon had been very timid, denying the Lord. "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these?" You love me more than these? You love me more than these other disciples love me? Peter had said that before, hadn't he? He had said, even though everybody might forsake you, I'm not going to forsake you. He saith unto him, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." He saith unto him, "Feed my lambs." He saith unto him again the second time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" He saith unto him, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." He saith unto him, "Feed my sheep." He saith unto him the third time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" Peter was grieved, because he said unto him the third time, "Lovest thou me?" And he said unto him, "Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee." Jesus saith unto him, "Feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdedst thyself and walkedst whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldest not." This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, "Follow me." Okay, so I want us to see this relationship as well. Jesus is the seeker of people, but he also seeks that people should follow him. So he comes and seeks people, just like the shepherd comes and seeks the sheep, but then the shepherd wants the sheep to follow him. And it's necessary that way. A lost sheep is lost, right? And so the shepherd has to go to it. Hey, Jonathan, can you just quiet down? You're doing a lot of whispering. Thank you. Don't worry, Daddy's almost finished. But you listen very carefully, okay? Because it might be for you. And so the shepherd seeks the sheep, and he seeks the individual sheep, not just people in a general sense. "I've come to seek and to save that which was lost," Jesus said. And of course, as you look at Luke chapter 15, you can see that the context bears out that it's not just anybody that we're talking about, even though salvation is for all. It's speaking for those who already, in God's mind, belonged to him. And so Peter is that sheep, in a sense, even though Peter is already converted, already regenerated man. Once again, the shepherd is coming to that wayward sheep and saying to him, "Look, come back, follow me." Verse 20, "Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved, following, which also leaned on his breast at supper and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? And so that's just a recollection of a previous conversation, right? If you remember that one. And Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Okay, back to the present. Peter's looking behind. He and Jesus are walking along the beach together. And they look behind and they see John get up from the campfire and follow after them. And Peter's thinking, yes, I've got to follow Jesus, but what's going to happen with this man over here? What's going to happen with him? Jesus saith unto him, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. Now, that's as far as I'm going to read in that chapter for our purposes tonight. But let's consider what Jesus' conversation with Peter. Peter, of course, must have a mixture of feelings when he sees Jesus on the land, when he sees Jesus with the food prepared and the fire already lit and inviting them to eat with him. This must be very, in some ways, a bittersweet kind of experience for Peter. He's comforted to think that Jesus is still there, but there's still maybe a question mark in his mind about what's the future hold for me. And of course, Jesus doesn't muck around. Jesus doesn't muck around. He talks about the very things that Peter needs solved in his heart. And of course, he does deal with Peter's self-confidence. He doesn't ignore the fact that Peter's self-confidence has been greatly shattered. Do you, in essence, do you really love me more than these other people? The implicit question is, you denied me. Jesus would never say that. Of course, he didn't say that. You denied me. You said you wouldn't, but you did. Now, do you really love me more than these other disciples here? And of course, Peter affirms that he does. And Jesus questions him with all the different nuances of love, brotherly love, family kind of affection, and just the generic word for love. Do you love me in all these different kind of ways, Peter? Because the Greek bears out these different kinds of loves. Do you love me in all of these ways, Peter? And Peter's grieved because Jesus is really kind of probing, you know, like an anesthetic needle when you're trying to just truly deal with a nerve that's in there. It can be quite painful. And Peter's really grieved about that because it's really making him have to reflect on himself. Do I? Well, I didn't really, but I want to. I didn't, but I do want to. I didn't, but I do. And why does he love Jesus? Because Jesus has come back to him again. Jesus has never done anything to indicate that Jesus would turn away from him. In fact, once again, Jesus has come back to him and to all the other disciples, because remember, they all scattered. They all denied the Lord. And the fact that he was back there again was in itself surely a very comforting thing for them to see. I mean, he'd already appeared to them before, but it's not like he was just going to move on. He wasn't just going to move on and go back to heaven and say, oh, well, didn't work out. We'll choose some other people to do the job. The 12 were failures, and we'll just find some other people somehow. Jesus came back to them, and it was to those 11 men, because Judas was a traitor, but it was to those 11 men that he left the Great Commission. He didn't go looking for other people now. It was to those same 11 men, wasn't it? There's surely a pattern here for us to see how God deals with people. And it was to those 11 men that he filled them with power. He wanted them to wait on him, filled them with power, anointed them to be able to go out and be witnesses and to really shake up Jerusalem, shake up the world. But what is he asking? It's one part of this message is that we're thinking about how God pursues, okay? He pursues the lost, and then once they're saved, he continues to pursue them. And when he pursues you, okay, that ought to be, yes, a very comforting thing if you If you have been wondering, okay, can God use me? That ought to be a very comforting thing. Because yes, God has plans and he will do his work through you, just like with Peter. But there needs to be a response, okay? And the response, of course, first of all, the question, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. And Jesus reiterates this to him. There's a work for you to do, Peter, okay? And in your case, it might not necessarily be preaching. It'll have something to do with the Great Commission, okay? It certainly will have something to do with the Great Commission in terms of declaring the gospel, in terms of lifting up Christ and honouring him. But the point is, there's something that he has for you to do. And Christians can so easily get discouraged, and discouragement is actually, unfortunately, it's a natural part of the journey, because we try, or we don't try enough. We seek to believe, or we don't trust as we ought, and we fall on our faces and get discouraged and feel like giving up. But then God says to us, look, I've still got something for you to do. Now, how would it have been if Peter had said, look, I know that you want me to feed your lambs and your sheep, which means to pastor the people, pastor the mature believers and the young ones. I know that you want me to do that, but I'm just too discouraged and I can't do that. Okay. Imagine how it would have been if Peter had said that. But how could Peter give up? You think about it. He's got Jesus right there in front of him, demonstrating by the very question, I really want to know if you love me. Why would Jesus really care about that? Why would Jesus really care whether Peter loved him? Because Jesus was so powerful, right? Jesus is God. So why would he have any interest in knowing? He could just choose somebody else, somebody who did love him, or somebody who demonstrated without fault that he loved him. I mean, there's nobody like that. So Jesus isn't doing that, is he? He's staying there. He's really zeroing in on Peter. And when you see Jesus zeroing in on Peter, it's not just that he's more interested in Peter than anybody else. It's just that we get a glimpse into Jesus by seeing how he relates to the individual. We get a glimpse into how he relates to us by seeing how he relates to someone else. And that's the message here. And there was no way that Peter wanted to throw in the towel when he could see that Jesus was not going to throw in the towel. How could he give up either? When he could see that Jesus had died for him, effectively. He saw himself now as the one who Jesus had died for. And now he sees the resurrected Jesus. And now he sees that Jesus is in his face saying, do you love me? He's back again, having this conversation with Peter. Do you love me? Yes, I do love you. Well, then I've got something for you to do. So you see these two actions, okay? Jesus pursues his people. Yes, he pursues the lost, but he also pursues the saved. He pursues you and me. And don't think that he's not pursuing after you. He's always pursuing after you. Like Bruce even said before, he's in us. So we might think of it as a pursuit, but we can also think of it as an indwelling as well. But the point is, he doesn't give up. A love that will not let me go. What should our response be? Because there needs to be a response, okay? We know what he's doing. What should our response be? I remember listening to Sam Jukater on one of the Bible College lectures that we watched on videos years ago. And he was saying, when you understand all the great things that God's done for you and how committed God is to you, how can you in any way give up? Okay, now in our natural human understanding, we get our eyes onto other things. We get our eyes onto, well, life might turn out this way, or I might fail, or, you know, I might not have the strength to go on, and things like that. But he's saying, when you get your eyes onto what God has done and who God is and what he's committed to be for you, okay, that's getting your eyes onto God, how can you give up, he said. How can you give up? And I always remember him saying that. And here we see Peter going through the same kind of thought process. He'd gone fishing. He was ready to do something else. But no. How could he do that? Feed my sheep, Jesus says to him. Feed my lambs. So there's the pursuit of God, and then there's the response of you. You need to think to yourself, well, enough of my feelings in this whole matter, enough of my discouraged and down kind of feelings about the Christian life. Don't you think Peter would have had a lot of down kind of feelings after his denial of Jesus? He would have had a lot of down feelings about that, wouldn't he? You know what he did after he denied the Lord, don't you? He went out and he wept bitterly. Wept bitterly. You know, I think if we could get a glimpse into what it was like to watch Peter just weeping bitterly, that would, I think a lot of us would be able to really deeply identify, because we know in retrospect we can see the end of the story. A lot of us would be able to deeply identify in a very human way with Peter, if we could have seen him on that night where he denied the Lord. And all of those details are recorded for us, aren't they? It's not for no reason that the spotlight throughout the Gospels zooms right in on Peter. Peter in particular. Zooms right in on him. And it's not for no reason that we see, even though Peter wasn't the first pope, okay, there is no such thing as a pope in the scripture. But even though Peter was not the head of the church, it's not for no reason that Peter was the one who God used to step up and be the upfront leader during the Feast of Pentecost, and to preach that sermon and to spearhead the mission in Jerusalem. 3,000 people getting saved in one day and baptized. Okay, who did that? It wasn't James, it wasn't John, it wasn't Thomas, it was Peter. But yet we find that Peter's failures are the things that are traced very minutely throughout the Gospels. But then we see Peter is the upfront man being mightily used of God. What's all of that about? We can relate to the biography of an individual, and that's just one individual. All the others had their stories to tell as well, but God wanted to demonstrate who he is for us and what we should do in response through the life of Peter. Christian, God's got your work for you to do, and he pursues after you, and that should be and probably is a comfort to you. But what do you do about that is the question. It's all very wonderful to know that my God pursues after me. It's all very comforting to know that he doesn't give up on me. But it should not stop there. There needs to be the response, just like it was with Peter. Jesus wanted to draw that response out of him. It's not enough, Peter, for me to chase after you. It's not enough for me to just do everything for you. I will, and I always will, and I'm committed to doing that. But I've got something for you to do so that you can be useful. Follow me. And I think that's very challenging and very important that we take that seriously. And may the Lord bless that to your hearts tonight.